I think our listeners are caring, and not just in the empathetic sense, although I do think they are empathetic. I think they are intellectually caring. I think they care enough to follow the news and be connected with what's going on in the world, to follow and listen to and really want to dive into the greatest music ever composed. I think they're caring enough to want to be in touch with their community and what's going on locally, and to always want to keep learning. Hey, I'm Davis Donovan from WSHU. Please give now at WSHU.org.
This is WSHU's After All Things, with daily news and culture from around Long Island Sound. New York is poised to roll back its climate law. Experts say swimming in Long Island Sound this summer comes with some increased risk. A Long Island Latino advocacy group wants the East End to adopt a new public safety law. Plus, it's the latest from WSHU's Long Story Short. Those stories and more are coming up. I'm Sabrina Garone. Governor Kathy Hochul and state lawmakers are poised to roll back New York's climate law. The New York Public News Network's John Campbell reports the governor says she's dealing in reality.
The rollback would do away with a mandate that New York cut its greenhouse gas emissions 40% by 2030. Instead, the deadline would be pushed back to 2040 and the target increased to 60%. The governor says it'll be part of a final state budget deal.
We cannot meet the current timelines without driving energy costs higher. The facts bear that out, and I cannot let that happen.
Climate change activists are furious with the governor. They say she's trying to score political points as she runs for re-election. In Albany, I'm John Campbell for the New York Public News Network.
The summer months mean swimmers in Long Island Sound could have increased chance of becoming exposed to a type of flesh-eating bacteria. The New England News Collaborative's Jenny Ahrens reports Connecticut's health commissioner says it's one of the most dangerous waterborne pathogens in the region.
It is called Vibrio vulnificus. It is a naturally occurring bacterium that likes warm, salty waters. Commissioner Dr. Manisha Jutani says people can become infected through eating raw shellfish or through an open wound.
If you are older, if you have uncontrolled diabetes, if you have liver disease, if you have an immunocompromising condition, you are going to be more at risk.
The commissioner says Connecticut only sees a handful of cases a year and it is treatable with antibiotics, but she advises anybody with an open wound should avoid going into the water.
Our skin is our biggest host defense to infection.
But at the end of the day, she says it is up to each individual to decide their own risk tolerance. For the New England News Collaborative, I'm Jenny Ahrens.
Members of the Latino advocacy group, OLA, are pushing East End towns and villages to adopt a public safety law. They say it outlines what local police can and should do during federal immigration enforcement actions. WSHU's Desiree DiOrio has more.
East Hampton Village became the first Long Island municipality to enact a version of the law, which supporters say will increase public safety for everyone, not just immigrants. The proposed law allows local police to verify the identity of masked people who claim to be federal immigration officers, and it creates a task force to monitor ICE activity. Several community members addressed the East Hampton Town Board Thursday, including East Hampton resident Sebastian Stein.
I think that the only way to move forward is through action, like clear roles, coordinated emergency planning, and accountability that can only be provided by local law. And the law being proposed provides exactly that.
East Hampton Town is set to vote on the measure this week. Desiree DiOrio, WSHU News.
What does a staffing shortage at Connecticut's DCF mean for the state's kids? A conversation on that is coming up.
On your commute, on your walk, on your couch. With the WSHU app, you can stream your favorite shows, check playlists, and catch up on podcasts anytime. Plus, you can send us feedback right in the app. Tell us what you love or what you'd like more of. Download the WSHU app free on the App Store or Google Play.
The New York State Attorney General's office is investigating a police-involved shooting in the Hamptons. Police say they shot and killed a man armed with a knife in Northampton Sunday afternoon. Officers were responding to a call about a violent domestic disturbance when the shooting occurred, according to police. Connecticut lawmakers are planning to redesign the handicap parking place cards issued by the state. The state's DMV commissioner says it's hard for police to see their expiration dates. The state will also update its application process for getting handicap place cards. The cost of living on Long Island is about a third higher than the national average. That's according to a Newsday analysis of data from Moody's Analytics. The four top expenses are housing, food, utilities, and transportation. Economists say Long Island prices are higher for a number of reasons, including housing scarcity and proximity to New York City. Former New Britain Mayor Erin Stewart is being investigated for spending on a city-issued credit card during her tenure. WSHU's Shelley Hessman-Kadish reports Stewart is running to be the Republican nominee for governor of Connecticut.
City records show thousands of purchases made on the city credit card from 2012 to 2025 when Stewart left office to campaign for governor. Mayor Bobby Sanchez, her Democratic replacement, said he is investigating credit card spending during her administration. According to the Hartford Courant, the records show purchases on the city credit card included women's, men's, and children's clothing, toys, party supplies, restaurants, and a private club. Some of the expenses were not backed up by receipts. Stewart said all the spending benefited community activities such as feeding volunteers and city summer camps. The state Republican convention is this weekend. Shelley Hassman-Kadish, WSHU News.
High staff turnover at Connecticut's Department of Children and Families is making already difficult situations worse. WSHU's Ebong Udama spoke with the Connecticut Mirror's Laura Tillman, who's done in-depth reporting on this. Their conversation is part of the collaborative podcast, Long Story Short.
You've reported on a series of tragic deaths of children in the care of Connecticut's Department of Children and Families over the past year. Is that what prompted you and your colleague, Ginny Monk, to do a deeper dive into why this has been happening?
Yeah, we were really interested in, you know, all of the different ways that the Office of the Child Advocate and other stakeholders have been investigating the possible policy changes that could address some of the issues that came up. But in those discussions, we kept hearing about this one concern that everyone acknowledges, which is that there's a lot of worker turnover happening at DCF. So with this story over the past several months, we just tried to get deep into what the real picture is of that turnover, why it matters, what can be done about it, and who is affected by it.
And also you found that the amount of money that was being spent on overtime tripled in the past 5 years. Why?
There's a lot of overtime being worked in some situations by people who have been with the agency a long time. So one of the dynamics we heard about is that DCF has a lot of employees who are women. A lot of them, you know, are in the time of life when they're maybe having kids. And so one of the dynamics we heard about is that when people can't do things after hours, they have family responsibilities. Some of the longer time employees end up kind of picking up the slack and helping out and doing things like driving kids to see their siblings or other things that can't necessarily happen during the normal workday. There's also the phenomenon that when people suddenly leave, someone needs to do that work, right? And so people are adding these cases to their existing caseloads.
And this burnout seems to have escalated in the past 5 years. You figured it started just before COVID and then escalated after that.
We found in the minutes of one of those meetings, I mentioned that DCF said that before the pandemic, turnover was somewhere between 10 and 12%. And then post-pandemic, and this was at the end of 2023, they said it was between 20 and 30% at that point. So it could have as much as tripled in that time.
Now, you used one person as an example of someone who had gone through child custody as a teenager and had experienced it over a number of years and now has some children herself. Her name is Riley Carew. Could you tell us about her and her experience and how it shows how devastating turnover can be?
So Riley, now she's a mom. She has kids of her own. When she started out involved with DCF, she was a two-year-old who was removed from her own mother. And she was in foster care for several years and then adopted in first grade. Later, at age 16, she was actually removed again from her adoptive family. And at that point, she was in foster care again. Through those years when she was in foster care, you know, she had a lot of contact with DCF caseworkers. And what really struck me was when she talked about this one caseworker she remembered from her teenage years who was really committed, you know, seemed to be doing whatever she could. At the time Riley was pregnant, she would take her to shop for clothes and take her to Taco Bell because that was her main pregnancy craving. And she would, you know, use money out of her own pocket, Riley said, to pay for these things. And then one day Riley had a doctor's appointment and they told her that worker's not assigned to you anymore. You're not going to have that worker anymore. You have a new worker. And she just talked about how big of a loss that was in terms of this figure that she had come to trust disappearing overnight, which, you know, for a kid in her situation was something that happened to her a lot in her life. It trusted adult figures who sort of betray that trust or disappear, but also that they didn't tell her why this had happened. And the message that sent to her too was, you know, you're not even worthy of receiving some kind of explanation from us about this. So I think it's like, it's an important perspective to hear because turnover among child welfare agencies is very common. It's a really hard issue for agencies across the country, but it does have real costs on the children and families that DCF serves. And I think that her perspective illustrates that.
Now, you've talked with the past commissioner and incoming commissioner. What is the state doing about this? How are they tackling this problem?
Yeah, I think to their credit, they really see this as a true concern. They're working on a number of ways. They're establishing new, you know, mentoring programs for existing workers. They're doing what they call stay interviews, which are like interviews with people who have decided to stay to sort of identify what are those reasons that people who do stay at DCF stay, and can they create more of those conditions for other people? They've hired a bunch of new social work case aides, which are these kind of helper positions for the social workers who can do things like drive kids to appointments so that the existing caseworkers don't have such a heavy load of tasks that they don't really need to be doing themselves, but often have had to do themselves in the past, which just makes their workload that much bigger. So they're trying a lot of different things.
Well, thank you so much, Laura. Really appreciate you doing this.
Thank you.
Laura Tillman is the Connecticut Mirror's Human Services reporter. Long Story Short comes from WSHU Public Radio and the Connecticut Mirror. Subscribe to the podcast to hear more from Laura about how the high turnover of Connecticut DCF social workers threatens the safety of children in their care. Available wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Ebong Udama.
For the latest news from around Long Island Sound, listen on the radio, online at WSHU.org, or download the free WSHU app. And for even more from this station, give us a follow on Instagram. You can find us at WSHU Public Radio. I'm Sabrina Garon. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk tomorrow.